Dear ones, on this morning, which obviously is the beginning of spring, as we've been invited to consider it with these wonderful words of music and these images, let's just take a few deep breaths together. And just be present here. You know, there's a jostling that occurs in our bodies, minds, and spirits when we change the clock. It takes a couple of days, doesn't it, to kind of settle into that. You can feel it. You can literally feel that there's something shifting. And so let's just breathe and just settle in, knowing it's okay. We can do this. We always do this. And we'll do it again today and move into the season of more and more light. And indeed, in this season where there's more and more light, it's the time for planting and planning our gardens. What will you plant this year? It's that special time when the bushes and the trees and the plants are budding. They're coming, and some of them are just starting to open. Some of them are already open. But they're announcing and promising the seasons of color and leaves ahead. What seeds are you ready to plant in the garden of your heart? It has been a challenging couple of years. Who are you now as you begin to consider removing your mask? May you have great compassion for who you are and where you've walked these last 2 years. It has not been easy. Let's take a moment in the silence to just be present with that compassion and awareness for who you are, who we are, and where we've walked these last 2 years. We can all agree it has not been easy. And as we breathe, let's consider what is ready to come forth from your inner knowing, your inner wisdom, having lived through this time. The garden of your heart takes tending, just like the garden that you're about to plant outside. It takes tending. It doesn't just happen. Indeed, so it is with the garden of the heart. It deserves tending. Make room. For as we do make room and settle in to the garden of the heart, where we're connected to all that is, we breathe, and from this place, we have the strength and the clarity that we can hold what's happening in our world around us, our brothers and sisters in Ukraine, in Russia, throughout the world, and in our own community. And we especially hold our dear Iola this morning. We've been through a lot, and we've grown. We're not the same people we were 2 years ago. We acknowledge that. And we're grateful for one another, for this medium that we've been able to use. We were talking about this earlier, getting to stay together through this time. And thank you, George, and thank you, all of you, who have helped to make this happen so that we can be together It's been vital. It was always important, but it's been vitally important during this time. And so we breathe and feel gratitude. For it's from this place of gratitude that we have what we need to move forward. And for that, we are indeed grateful. And so, dear ones, I'm really happy to be with you this morning. And when I was thinking, you know, it's interesting for people who have the audacity to go up to the front of the room and turn around and act like they have something to say in the midst of the times we're living. I don't know whether it's audacity, is it courage, is it foolishness? I'm not sure. It may be a combination of all of it in these days and times. Oh, my goodness. And so when I think about what is it that I can move, especially in a group that don't know me, I've never been here before, you've never seen me before, what is it that I walk into this space and have to say that can be useful, that might be helpful, that might be inspiring, that might be an invitation, that might be something that could help in these days and times? When I was talking to Sally some time ago about what I might speak as we looked ahead, because things change so much moment to moment, day to day in these days and times, we were thinking, well, it's March 13th. It's almost the beginning of spring. That would be the thing to talk about, is the beginning of spring, that we're coming forward, that it's a time of renewal, beginning again. And indeed, that is the time that we're in. And so for me, it reminds me of thinking about light, and here we are with daylight savings time again, and there's another kind of light that I really have always been inspired by, and that's the light of the moon. Don't you love the moonlight? Moonlight is magical. It's mystical. It's romantic. Moonbeams on the water is one of the most beautiful and relaxing things. We living here in the Northwest have a wonderful relationship with water, don't we? And I'm sure many times you have seen the sailboat gliding by in the midst of the moonlight. Have you ever had to find your way by the moonlight? Have you ever walked in the snow by moonlight? It is so beautiful, and it is so deceiving at the same time. And that's where I get to with this idea of moonlight as a form of light. It's deceiving. It doesn't show colors. Did you ever notice that? You don't see color in moonlight? Like, for example, this top that I'm wearing, which is kind of a bright, bright coral color. We can see that in this light, but in the moonlight, it's just a whitish gray. It doesn't show light. And I'm not going to go into a science lesson here about light and light beams and light rays and all that. We don't need to get into that. All I'm just talking about is the effect of that, that moonlight is beautiful and it's deceptive. It doesn't show us all that's really there. A favorite poem of mine comes from, it says it beautifully, it says it perfectly. Remember back in the days, I don't know, many of you have been around long enough to remember. Do you remember the Moody Blues? Remember that group from back in the, I guess it was late 60s, early 70s, and they actually played music up until not long ago, really. I always loved them. And they had this wonderful album called, their first album called The Days of Future Past. And in the song, from the song Nights in White Satin, there was this poem, cold-hearted orb that rules the night, removes the colors from our sight. Red is gray and yellow white. but we decide which is right and which is an illusion. Don't you love that? Doesn't that just say it? And that's the thing. Because it's true, isn't it? This whole idea of we can't see what's really there, or we do, sometimes we see the colors, sometimes we don't. And that brings up the idea of perception. Because perception is a powerful, powerful thing. And when you consider what's going on in our world in this moment in time, perception plays a huge part, doesn't it? And if you and I, in this little bit of time that we have together, could talk about anything, it feels important to me to consider the idea of the power of our perceptions. So in this thing about whether we're looking at moonlight, whether is it red or is it white, which is right or which is an illusion, that's the underlying issue in our perceptions. Another example of that, I don't know if any of you are in the age group that I'm in, but may have to deal with the C word, which is cataracts. And I am just about to have, next month I have to have the cataracts removed. And the doctor was telling me that I had the type of cataracts that there's a name for them. I don't remember the name, but it causes there to be a brown yellow filter over my vision so that the colors that I see have been influenced by this brown yellow filter, which is as the cataracts have grown. And she said to me, you are really going to see colors this summer that you've never seen before after the cataracts are removed. And it's really interesting, is it? Because I didn't know that. I've seen what I've seen. I thought I've seen really beautiful colors all my life. You know, they look fine to me, but what's actually happening is there's this filter over them. And that's what happens with our perceptions, because our perceptions are made up of all of our beliefs and history and experiences that we've had all our lives. That's where our perceptions come from. There's a filter over what we're seeing out there. And that filter is made up of each one of our own experiences. And none of us have walked in the same exact place, so nobody has the exact same filter. So no one has the exact same perception. So isn't it interesting when we all point at one thing, we can all see it differently based on our perceptions, based on that filter. So another example of this is my great uncle Moat. He was a fighter pilot in World War II, and he flew many missions and received many accommodations for his bravery and his success during the war. The local airport in his town was actually renamed for him because of his accomplishments as a fighter pilot. However, Uncle Moat was colorblind. He could not see the color red at all. Now, this is a big deal for a pilot, and it should have kept him on the ground, because as a pilot, you need to be able to distinguish the red blinking warning lights on the top of high objects. And also, a pilot needs to be able to distinguish an oncoming plane at night by which side the red lights on the plane are, which way they're going. And he couldn't see red. He couldn't see it. Well, Uncle Moat knew that being colorblind for red would keep him from being a pilot. So he somehow was able to figure out that what he saw as red was red. And he passed all the tests that were required at that time to clear him for having the proper vision for being a pilot and what a pilot he was. So on some level, good old Uncle Modestino Tarantino, yes, he was Irish, was able to adjust his perception to be able to do something that could have been very dangerous had he not understood and corrected for it. Perception is powerful. Now, why do we go through this elementary look at moonlight and cataracts and color blindness and how I see things versus how you do? Because indeed, perception is powerful. It affects every single thing we do, every thought we have. And we realize that what we believe creates our experience. So how important is our perception in the process of creating our world? And it's all very interesting considering the color red, but how does this come into play when we're considering issues like abortion, gun control, nuclear armament, party lines, and country borders? And we have seen this quite dramatically as we have lived through the last 6 years, a volatile political climate, the pandemic, and now played out in the extreme with this tragic war. Opposing perception have caused great turbulence in our collective world. So whose perception is right and who's wrong? We've seen many examples of people strongly believing something that has no supportive evidence. We have seen many examples of people pointing at the same thing and using it to support completely different views. I do a lot of spiritual coaching and couples coaching, and I can tell you over and over again, I've seen couples sitting across from each other at the table, and they're pointing at the same thing, the same occurrence, the same thing that happened, and they both point at it to prove their point, which is opposite points, opposite views. There are reasons and histories behind everyone's view, everyone's perspective. And you may say, well, Joanna, I know if something's right or not. I cannot condone something I feel is wrong. No. And you're not asked to here. But what we are asked is to take a moment to consider that the other sides have perceptions that is every bit as real to them as yours is to you. And yeah, think of how this comes up in our relationships. You and your partner, you and your child, you and your parent, you or your neighbor, you and your coworker may come up against an issue that causes conflict where you both believe yourselves to be right. And for who you are and where you've been and what you've learned, you are right. And so is the other person from their experience. So what we have to do then is to back up and consider this truth about one another. We have to put ourselves in the other's shoes. Maybe by doing so, the way that we know is right may not be as crystal clear. It may look different. Dear ones, we're living in a world that is so divisive. How are we going to get to unity and clarity if we don't figure out ways to be able to communicate? If you consider any conflict between you and your partner, between you and your child's teacher, between the neighbors, between the kids, between city council and the mayor, between the police force and the teenage community, you can be sure at least part of the problem will come from not having a shared perception. My goodness, we're seeing this play out on television every day, every minute. Many of us have the same values and the same goals, but we bring our own history and our own experience that stands as a filter in front of us as we look at the issue, and that influences the way we see things. So in a conflict, if we can remember that in order to come to a shared perception, we have to find some common ground. And dear ones, with some of the divisiveness, I wonder sometimes if the only common ground is the weather. But that's a starting place isn't it? I mean, do you get this? Do you get how important this is? Because it's a simple concept, the idea of perception. But dear ones, it's affecting all of it. And you and I know what we see. We're seeing it playing out in the world, and we're seeing extreme views have a whole lot of power, way too much power. How can we get to solutions? And the thing I'm suggesting here is the way, one of the ways, an important way, is that you and I can practice considering that there's more than one perception. And you and I, or you and this other person, may not agree, but we have to have ways to find common ground, because we can't get anywhere until we do. And so we can practice that across the breakfast table, across our backyards, at the church together, in our communities. We can practice that, because we're going to need that skill as we move forward in this world, in the world that we're living. And as you and I practice that and claim that and begin to encourage that, encourage common ground, even if it is just the weather, it's a starting place. We need to consider our starting places. And when we look what's playing out in front of us and seeing the tragedy of it, take a deep breath. The tragedy of it. We may think, what can I possibly do? Well, dear ones, we pray, we write our checks, we send love, we send light. And because we're all one, that work that we do to shift inside our own hearts, to open up to the possibility of common ground, can make a difference. It's a starting place. And that's what we're looking for right now, isn't it? We can begin to heal ourselves, each other, the whole world, when we remember that everyone has intrinsic value and deserves respect. Everyone has a perspective based on their own experience that may be different from yours and mine. From this place of understanding, we can find common ground. We could get to a consensus, and maybe even a way to see things in a new light. After a deep winter of discontent, spring's arrival brings us relentless renewal. And I say relentless because those little saplings poke their heads up from the ground, whether it's muddy, it's snowy, whether the ground is frozen, it's amazing. Spring reminds us that no matter the conditions in its world, we can begin again. And remembering to consider another's perspective will go a long way to helping us find common ground and that which can unite us, heal us, and lead us forward. So in this moment where I have this wonderful opportunity to meet you all and get to be with you in this little bit of time together, let us acknowledge that you and I can make a difference by considering our perceptions and the perception of the ones across from us, and to look for common ground. It will make a difference. Blessings, everyone.